would have dropped them on four.
Yeah, I'm sure he's been reminded of it. Ball after ball after ball. Tension everywhere. It's going to be Andre Russell around the wicket to Martin Guptill.
Well, he deserves it, really. He really does deserve it. He's played magnificently. 199 not out.
There it is, straight down the ground. Martin Guptill becomes the first New Zealander to score a one-day international double hundred. The fifth man in world cricket to score a double hundred in one-day internationals. What a day for him. What a day so far for New Zealand here at the Wellington National Stadium.
You can't help but like it there. Great team to watch, and of course that game against Australia, even though the lowest scoring of the games involving the big teams, maybe even the lowest scoring game of the tournament, might have been the very best. Ken Rutherford joins us, the former New Zealand skipper. And Ken, even though there's great trans-Tasman rivalry, I think there is a growing respect and even, not fondness, but a watchability that these two nations bring to all cricket games now at one-day level.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think certainly New Zealand has improved, haven't they, over the last two or three years, probably since McCallum's taken over as captain. And look, I think the Aussies, say 3 years ago, went through a bit of a blip, but certainly you guys are back at full steam ahead at the moment. And I did hear your preamble, and I tend to agree with the assertion that it could be a New Zealand-Australia final come the weekend.
Hey Ken, what do you put the great results for New Zealand so far? The team's just playing so well together, obviously brilliantly led, and probably the best chance for New Zealand to win, you know, their first World Cup. But what do you think are the most important attributes of the side at the moment?
Oh, I think the captain and the coach have really set a stall for their side, which is really thorough, and the preparation, the playing's been very thorough. And they have a real confidence in each other, to be honest. I think it's really evident when you watch them play. If Bolt doesn't do it one day, the confidence is in Southie to do it. We saw Guptill and Taylor at times struggle during the first part of the World Cup, the first few matches, but we're seeing both of them, in particular Guptill anyway, hitting form with real vengeance in the last two matches. And I've got a feeling Taylor might be leaving his best work for the last couple of matches tomorrow and at the weekend. So I think it's just a real belief and a real togetherness that this unit has developed over the last couple of years.
Ken, you're not going to like this, but it took you 12 tests, something like 21 innings and a span of almost 3 years to bring up 230 test runs. And that bloke, yeah. Guptill, he did it in 50 bloody overs. Now,
I know, prick. Now,
by the way, Ken went on from that rocky start. After that point, Ken Rutherford averaged close to 50 in Test cricket and became a great New Zealand cricketer and captain. So they persisted for a reason. But Ken, the game has changed, and I don't know whether you blokes would even, back in the day, have recognised what goes on now.
No, it is. It's incredible, just the batting in particular, and a lot's been made of technology and the bats, etc. But I just think the players are a bit prepared and more professional than perhaps we were, you know, 20, 25 years ago. I actually spoke at a function, I was MC at a function last week here in Hamilton in New Zealand before the New Zealand-Bangladesh game, and Wayne Phillips was the speaker, and of course Flipper got 159 against Pakistan and Perth in his first test match. You know, I think I mentioned at the dinner, it took me 9 bloody test matches to get that many runs, Flipper, so... Yeah, no, but it is staggering some of the feats of batsmanship that is going on these days. 230-odd not out the other day, Guptill. I mean, it's just really, even 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, if you'd said that could happen, you'd really shake your head and disbelieve them.
Hey, Ken, if you're walking out with the Black Caps tomorrow and facing the Proteas, what would you be fearing most about them, and what sort of planning would the captain, the coach, be thinking about in taking on such a professional and a dangerous side with AB de Villiers in there?
Yeah, no, look, I think you guys hit the nail on the head also when you mentioned AB de Villiers could bowl a few overs tomorrow. I think the big opportunity is with their fifth bowler. Mm. I mean, Steyn, he's been coming for a bit of criticism, I think, probably unjustified. Dale Steyn, he still bowls around the mid-140s, early 140s, swings it away nicely. I think Morkel was hitting his straps at just the right time, and And this guy, Kyle Abbott, he's one of these underrated guys who just doesn't seem to perform badly, really. But I do reckon the New Zealanders will target Tahir. He's a leggy. He doesn't really turn his legs for that much. He bowls his wrong and does turn that quite a lot. I think they'll go after him, and they'll certainly go after Dumini and Aby de Villiers if they bowl. So that's going to be the opportunity. It's going to be really interesting to watch the first 10 overs, guys, I reckon, to see, you know, just how McCullum goes about it. There's a lot of talk on the radio stations over here. Will McCullum temper his approach somewhat and play a bit more conservative to get through to that middle stage where we can put South Africa under pressure with the bowlers 4 and 5? I think it's going to be a real key part of the game is those first 10 overs for New Zealand batting.
Great observation. Ken Ruthervit has joined us live from New Zealand ahead of New Zealand, South Africa, and they must go after Tahir. Tahir not only bowls quite quickly through the air for a leg spinner, but also he loves bowling his overs quickly. Bang, 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 correct. Bang, 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 bang. Mm. 6 balls, maybe a run, but quick. Let's get through this quickly. And before the batsmen have scratched or talked, it's a maiden or one run off it. And I bet New Zealand look to absolutely put a wedge in that type of bowling early. I think that'll be one of the first markers as to how you guys are going.
Yeah, you're right. I was really surprised to see the Sri Lankans play him with, too much caution, I thought, at times. Look, I know Dilshan and the other opener lost their wickets. Tirumana lost their wickets early on, so it always puts pressure on the middle order, doesn't it, to try and keep wickets in hand, perhaps. But I really thought they treated Tahir just with way too much caution, in particular the guy Jay Wardner, who's just a superb player of a spin, and he seemed to be a bit like a rabbit in headlights, didn't he, the way he was going about his work on that particular occasion. But now that's going to be the opportunity. South Africa will sense an opportunity early on to get at McCullum and to get amongst New Zealand's middle order. There's a question mark, some say, on Grant Elliott at 5. I'm not in agreement with that. I think Grant's a superb player and can play a variety of roles in the middle order. And Corey Anderson, maybe get him in early on, the first, say, 15 or 20 overs. But no, I think South Africa will certainly be looking at McCullum, and they'll be saying, right, we want this guy back in the hutch pretty darn quickly, because he's the sort of guy who can turn the game, can't he, in the first 10 to 15 overs, no doubt about that.
Yeah, really interesting point, Ken. Are you surprised that the pace attacks haven't gone short pitch at him more often? We saw how he got away to a flyer against the Aussies. The only ball he didn't play well was that quick ball off, it might have been Mitch Johnson, copped him in the arm.
Mm.
And I watched all the footage of his last game where he gives himself room and he can hit it a lot of different places, but I'm surprised that teams have served up similar lengths to him and given him too much room.
You're right. He's spot on. I think a sort of straighter approach, shorter approach around sort of middle would be the way to go to Brennan. Although in saying that, well, I think we've seen him in the IPL at times be devastated to the onside as well for anything that's short. So, but I'm totally agreeing with you what you're suggesting about his play, looking to slash it to any part of the offside. He basically just looks to give himself room. And depending on how much he slices the ball inside out, can go mid-off through to third man. So it does make it difficult for a captain, but you're spot on the way Australia did bowl early on. But to give the captains some credit here, fellas, it happens so quickly. Yeah, you know, it literally happens in 4 overs, and McCullum's gone from 0 to 50.
Yeah.
It's staggering stuff. And, you know, all great plans aside, the ability for a captain to react so intuitively and so quickly when that sort of blitzkrieg is developing, it's not so straightforward.
Whilst history is not directly going to have any effect or make the result of this game go one way or the other, 4 times New Zealand have stumbled at this very hurdle, the semi-finals of Cricket's World Cup. And the one that resonates the most was that famous game against Pakistan, again on home soil for New Zealand, when Imzam Amul Haq announced himself on the world stage.
Mm-hmm.
That at that point, I remember the first time I'd really felt it as an Australian cricket fan. Maybe I'm too young to know the halcyon days of Hadley, even though I shouldn't be. But I felt that New Zealand as a nation were, for the first time in my cricket watching, right behind their team. And I don't know how it played out, really. I don't know whether it helped or hindered. Are we back in the same situation? Is the country as one behind the Black Caps, and how do you think that'll play out?
Well, I think a few comments on that. When I was at the Australian New Zealand game at Eden Park a couple of weeks ago, that very quick game of cricket allowed us to go watch some Super Rugby later on that night, so it was quite good. But I've never ever experienced a crowd like that in a New Zealand stadium watching a game of cricket, and it was just staggering. I think a lot of it is to do with the way Eden Park's been reconfigured for the World Cup rugby back about 3 years ago, when they just redeveloped the whole ground. It's a lot smaller, a lot more intense is the atmosphere created by the crowd there, and there'll be more of that tomorrow, guys. South Africa, South Africa will be ready for that. That can only be a boon for the home side. I think the fact that we played in Wellington in a similar situation, where there was a big crowd supporting the guys, make or break game, we got through that one quite comfortably in the end. I think that'll help the guys. I know what to expect now at Eden Park tomorrow, having played an Aussie game as well a couple of weeks ago. So I think that sort of white-hot atmosphere, which they must expect, must be a positive for the Kiwis and could well be a negative for the South Africans, because we all know that, yes, New Zealand may have got here four times to the stage of World Cups. South Africa have only got there once in the past, if we know, for the apartheid, and they've only played since 92. But there have also been a few knockout situations where they haven't quite got through it. So I think in terms of the kind of situation you're inquiring about, mate, I think it's going to be far more positive for New Zealand than for the South Africans.
Yeah, great.
Hey, Adam Milne's injured. Our mail is Matt Henry comes into the side. Yeah, overtakes maybe McCallaghan or even Mills. What's your take on that one?
Yeah, look, I'm a McClenaghan fan. He's a guy who often goes at 5-6 and over, but he always seems to get wickets. But he played against Bangladesh a week or so back here in Hamilton and really struggled for rhythm. He ended up on his backside more often than not in his follow through. Yeah, he's really struggling for a bit of rhythm. He just hasn't been playing. And Matt Henry is a guy who, if you look at his one-day record, I think he's only played about 8 games, but he's done well in all those 8 games. And when the 15 was selected for this World Cup, he was most definitely the 16th and considered the most unlucky. Well, he's been playing domestic cricket for Canterbury in the Plunkett Shield, which is our 4-day competition over here, and he's bowled a lot of overs the last 2 or 3 weeks. So the late male, and Brendan McCullum is a punter, the late mail has suggested that Henry's going to come from the sidelines and usurp both Kyle Mills and Mitchell McClenaghan in terms of the position on the side. So on the face of it, you'd say it's an interesting one, and probably a little bit unfair on the face of it to Mills and McClenaghan, but in terms of winning a one-off game, it probably makes some sense.
I was fortunate enough, well, having Fox and being a cricket lover, I love watching cricket and I love watching England being subjected to great pain. And not only, I'm sure your son pointed this out, that the family curse of slow Test career starts certainly didn't strike Hamish, who passed.
No.
With his first run, he passed your first inning score, and then by drinks, he passed all of your first 10 innings. And I could keep doing the jokes, but he kept going and going and going and got to 171 and. It's been his highest test score. His only test century. Where is Hamish? Because I tell you what, it wasn't just 171, Ken. I'm not saying this because you're on air. Just for our listeners, I watched that game, and it was an imperious 171. And I remember thinking that with Rutherford and I think Williamson might have been involved in that game with some quality. I haven't checked it, but I thought they're coming, and I'm very surprised that Hamish isn't part of the journey. At the moment, I'm sure there's more chapters to be played out.
Yeah, look, he's sort of become a bit of a test player, really, which the way he plays the game, you think he'd be as well attuned to playing 50 over in 2020. His 2020 record's not too bad for New Zealand, but the 50 over record, both domestically actually and for New Zealand, when he's got a chance, is pretty poor. But he's had a couple of speed bumps lately. He'll be a chance. In fact, I'm sure he'll be in the team to go to England. We tour there in May, June, play a couple of tests over there. He'll be there, I'd imagine, opening the batting with Tom Latham. He's just got to have a couple of technical things which any young player has to get through. You know, once the videos go firing around the world and the opening bowlers see a couple of weaknesses there, they're pretty quick to pick up in that way. So he's been working through a few things, and he's coming out. He'll come out at the end of it a far better player, I believe. And that 171, that was a hell of an innings, wasn't it, a couple of years ago against the Poms? And
and it was against Anderson, Anderson, Finn, and Broad when they were bowling well. This was not the mentally scarred Anderson, Finn, and Broad that we now love so much in Australia. But they just got caught out by this new kid, and he was how tall are you, Ken?
Yeah, just under 6 foot.
And how tall's Hamish?
Yeah, probably about just a couple of inches taller, probably. Yeah,
because I just saw him as a very upright, taller opening batsman, and that's always lovely to watch.
Yeah, no, he's very strong through the offside. He's and they probably he probably got his 100, and probably 75-80% of it was through between sort of backward point and extra cover. So it took him a while to work that one out, to be fair, the Poms. But no, he's got a few issues there, mainly with the short ball. And you know, clearly, if you're an opening batsman, you've got an issue with the short ball. It's a hard one to, the word goes around the trap, so to speak, and you've got to sort yourself out. So he's in the midst of redeveloping parts of his technique to cope with that. I'm sure he'll be okay. I think we play you guys actually in 12 months' time in a test series over here. So that's the sort of target which I'm sure he'll have in his mind.
Get your old mate Chris Cairns to teach me how to hook one-handed like he used to do at the MCG. Just one hand on the bat.
Ask Chris to teach him something else.
I was thinking of Lance, not Chris.
Well done.
I was remembering Lance than Chris. Yeah, Chris will leave out of the equation.
Lance is my vintage, mate.
That's exactly right. Swat for six. Thanks so much for joining us, Ken.
No problem, guys.
I'm a huge New Zealand and through some bets place, an enormous Martin Guptill fan. So I'd love you to make the final and for him to do very, very well in both games.
Yeah, no, I've always been a Guptill fan as well. I spent a bit of time living in Johannesburg a few years ago, and when Guptill burst on the scene, I would say to my mates, this guy will be as good as Callis. And they've been laughing at me for the last few years, but they're taking a bit of notice now.
Got one back. Hey, Ken, can you win it? Do you reckon New Zealand can win?
Yeah, well, I think we're real good things to win tomorrow. I've just got a good sense about tomorrow, a good feeling about it. I like the way McCallum's going about his work in terms of his messages to the media and stuff. It just seems a nice, calm and calm attitude to the whole team. I spent a bit of time with Williamson and Anderson at this function I spoke at last week with Phillips, and they just, you hear all these stories, don't you, these days about the process and all that carry on. Well, it is very much about the process for these guys. They don't seem at all over the top in terms of the wins that we've had so far.
You know, there is something else, Ken, and I'm not in any way being facetious or silly here, but Australia has some sort of sporting ownership over England, and bar the Olympic Games when they threw all the cash into it and did well, the Poms have always been our whipping boy. And it parlays from sport to sport. We like playing against them. I think we just believe that we've got physically and mentally in sport, we've got it over them. Now, we know that New Zealand and South Africa meet regularly in rugby, and you own the world in rugby. And does that confidence seep through to the other national sports?
Yeah, probably more latterly in cricket. I think historically we've been probably happy to get to a semi-final in cricket. We've probably seen it as being a huge pass mark, and whatever we've looked to achieve prior to a tournament like a World Cup, if we got to a semi, we probably thought that was just great. Different for this team, all the way through, and from say 6 to 12 months back, even we were talking about a semi-final being very much just a pass mark, and that's all. But the final itself being what it's all about, and I certainly get a sense of that with this team that tomorrow is just one more step to the final. In terms of playing South Africa, you're absolutely right. I mean, New Zealand South Africa sporting contests, in particular the rugby field, are historic. They're often absolutely mega in terms of what happens. And I've got a feeling tomorrow's going to be quite special too. I've got a feeling also there could be a few really hot points to the game too that hopefully won't spill over. There will be a bit of tetchiness there between the two sides because there is a bit of history there.
Yeah, I mean, it even straddles the apartheid era and plays a role in that story with New Zealand rugby being part of the story and South African cricket being impacted more than any other sport. So another chapter plays out tomorrow, and Ken, we couldn't have had a better man to set the scene. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Cheers, guys. Good luck.